This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Gay and lesbian radio for the world at joy.org.au.
And welcome to Detours. This is Macca on Joy 94.9. And thank you to the guys from Saturday Mag. Always a pleasure, always topical. Now, I'm going to start off today, just for a change, with the Cheerios, which of course everyone goes, oh God, here he goes again. But, you know, we start off. First off, number one is Sula, then Elsa, Bronnie Pike, of course, Andrea Coote, Horst, Angelica, Gav and Bev and Dean, Dallas Fort Worth, Tom, MBM, Big Daddy, of course, Resplendent in Khaki in Keilor, Marie the Doughy Mole, Emily, and Father Fadayev. Now, Father Fadayev, I'm not sure if he's on his knees or what he's doing, whether he's painting or whatever, but he's actually just got back from Geneva, and he's going to have a chat to us probably next week about how expensive Geneva is. And let me tell you, 800 euros they were paying a night for a poxy, and I mean poxy, hotel room that there was no space between the bed and, you know, well, the aptly named table. So as the Swiss are known for a couple of things, hiding people's money, hiding war criminals, now they can add another one, hotel scamming.
That's extraordinary, Macca. 800.
800 euros, yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Have you ever found that before?
Well, they do put the prices up in Geneva around motor show time, but Geneva is probably one of the most expensive cities in the world. Even the kids' menu in the room, fish fingers, $30.
Per finger?
Well, per finger, yeah. I mean, you don't even get the nail. So, but we've got a really, really interesting show today, because we've got two guests that actually both have something in common. Yes, we have our pilot, our erstwhile pilot. How are you, Janine?
I'm great.
Turn her microphone on,
Ah, she's great. Ah.
So no, I'm great.
You're
just
great?
Lost my voice.
Have you?
At Mardi Gras, so.
Oh. Just experienced Melbourne traffic, you know,
it's
rain.
Yes, it's in rain, we see people are not used to it. People are not used to it. Isn't it fantastic?
It's great.
I don't have to water the garden for at least a week.
Who's our other erstwhile guest?
Well, we have Chow Cow, otherwise known as Jonathan. Now, Jonathan has also, I think, partly grew up in Hong Kong. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes.
Which part, Jonathan? Which part grew up in Hong Kong?
The Peak.
Oh,
mid-levels.
Ooh, well to do.
And Janine is a pilot, and she's based in Hong Kong, so we're going to talk a little bit about Hong Kong specifically. But I'm interested.
Uh-oh.
Airlines. Now, we're not going to say which airline you work for, because we actually like it and we don't want to ruin its reputation by me talking about it. But this, the world economic, the financial crisis, whatever we're going to call it, is causing a lot of problems for airlines, and capacity is one of them. What we're seeing is prices coming down and capacity aircraft that are ordered and that they can't cancel are coming online. So how do you see what's going? What is the future of air travel? Is it going to continue to get cheaper, or are there going to be airlines that withdraw from the market?
There are airlines that are folding in Europe at the moment. So the capacity in general is shrinking, and demand will always be there for people to travel. The problem for the airlines at the moment is yield.
Yep.
So the airplanes are still full. We're still flying around reasonably full, but the yield and, of course, the fuel cost, which is adding to that. You'll see an expansion. The smart airlines will be maintaining crews, and keeping the aircraft, obviously, that are coming for the expansion, because it will happen.
Because obviously the biggest cost for an airline is the aircraft and the fuel. The crew cost, relatively.
The technical crew cost is high.
Is high. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, we have, we have a number of really budget airlines flying out of Australia and into Australia and within Australia. We've got Tiger. Obviously, you know, we've got One Star. But really, is the future at that end of the market? Or I actually am inclined to think that something that's a little bit more middle market, rather than business class, that there is a real space for that. It's either you're really, really cramped and the food's shit, and all that. Or, you know, you pay a lot more, almost like the premium economy product. But where do you think the growth is going to be? Is it going to continue to be at the budget end?
Yeah, I definitely think so. People are becoming, it seems, less fussy, particularly regionally. They just want to get from A to B, yeah. Melbourne to Sydney.
Yeah.
Even I came down with Australia's leading airline from Sydney the other day, and
Qantas, Australia's never timely airline service.
Yes, they were not on time, but they were throwing chicken sandwiches at people, and they really have been brought.
Literally throwing them?
Yes. It's like, thanks.
Because they had to, yeah, what, to encourage you, or, you know, to...
I don't know, I said I'll pass.
Yep. Yeah.
But I think people are less demanding, they really just want to get from A to B.
Yeah.
The frills they don't want to pay for. I mean, even Virgin, you have to pay if you want check-in baggage on certain tickets.
Yeah,
which is fair enough. Most people, why should you pay for a service that you don't need?
I mean, I don't know how they... Honestly, I mean, Jonathan and I were looking at going to New Zealand. So, you know, just went onto the web. And, you know, there was the... I think Pacific Blue was like $112. Mm-hmm. And then there was Emirates, $140.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, Qantas, I think, was 200, you know. Jetstar, for some reason, wasn't on there. I don't know, perhaps they don't fly to New Zealand. But, you know, the variation in price, but you think, okay, Pacific Blue, it was $8 for your baggage. You think, $112 for a 3.5-hour flight. I mean, how the hell do they make it pay?
Well, I mean, I could be wrong, because I don't work for Emirates, but I believe that is aircraft utilisation. That aircraft comes here, it sits on the ground. They can do a link because they have rights between Melbourne. I'm not sure about Sydney, but
yeah, Melbourne and
Auckland.
Yeah,
it utilises the aircraft. Parking an aircraft for that time is expensive.
Okay, so get a few passengers on, even if it's not actually going to make you much money. You're going to lose less because you're getting some money back.
And it opens up the market for New Zealand to try and bring people from New Zealand back through Australia, off to Europe, up to London, because Emirates ends up at London at the other end, doesn't it?
And I don't know if they have a direct service like Auckland, Dubai? I don't know.
I think it is, yeah. I think when you actually... some of the flights are Melbourne-Dubai, I believe, but some are Melbourne-Auckland-Dubai.
Yeah.
So they're using that landing right, because you've got to use it otherwise.
Correct, use it or you lose it.
So, and, of course, you sit at the absolute pointy end of the plane.
I do. I don't, you know...
You sit on the left or the right?
I'm on the left.
On the left? Mm-hmm. And the captain's always on the left?
Yes.
Okay, why is that? Because you're a left winger? You're a left winger? Or as they would say in America, you know, a liberal?
Yeah. No, we shouldn't go into politics.
No.
Not a good idea. I got myself in trouble at a dinner table in Sydney over politics.
Well, people can't help it if they're wrong, you know.
This is true. But, yeah, no, the captain sits on the left. I think it's just...
tradition?
Tradition. A lot of our rules, the rules of the air, like on the road, are designed around the captain being on the left now, so...
Okay.
That's just how it is.
Now, I do have one question. I'm sure... Oh, I've got lots of questions, but I'm sure you saw the footage of the guy who landed the plane in the Hudson.
Yes, absolutely.
How frigging amazing was that? I mean, as a pilot, were you like, this is something special? This is really...
Yeah, absolutely. I've been asked this a lot. It's not just amazing by the feat of actually putting the aircraft into the water. He had to make a critical decision, and he and the first officer, of course, because everyone forgets about the other crew member. But it's human nature to want to take the easy route, and he had other options, and the easy route mentally would be a nice concrete surface that I, you know, understand. And we also know that ditching an aeroplane is going to cause some fatalities in statistically. So he made the hard call of not what we call stretching the glide to try and make an airfield, and people would have died, not only in the aircraft but on the ground potentially, if he'd made the wrong decision. And everyone survived. Unbelievable.
Because you know, with back in you know, in previous times, because a lot of the planes were, the wings were over the fuselage, and the engines, even though they hung down, when it hit the water, for example, there wasn't as much drag or potential to
Correct.
Tip. Whereas with modern jets with the wings on it, there is. And I mean, I've watched that footage, and I just think, you know. And then, of course, you know, everyone's out, and he goes through the plane again and checks. And there's all the people, you know. But there were people that were in business class that were in the rafts. Did you notice that?
No,
no. There's and the economy passengers are on the wings.
Well, that's
well,
there's
they pay
email
more.
Going around doing the, there's an email going around saying that that's the difference between first class and economy. I know.
Not that you get the rafts first.
Yeah, you get in the raft first.
The economy people stand on the wing.
Well, I think everyone gets a raft. I think first class probably gets the fur-lined.
Yes.
Raft.
Well, no, you get a
survival pack.
You get a customer service manager in your raft.
Now, after the break, we're going to explore Jonathan Yee's journey.
Travel, yes.
A bit more. You're on Detours with
Macca
and Greg.
Bah.
You're on Detours on Joy 94.9, and that's Josh Grogan with a fabulous song called Fed and Watered. Now, last week we were going to speak to Macca in Bali. We didn't get the opportunity to do that. But today I'd like to know a little bit, Macca from Bali, who are you with over there?
I'm with Farida, who is the director of sales at the Swiss Grand Hotel in Noosa Villa. Say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Farida.
Hi, Greg.
Look, it's warm and humid today, but that's not unusual for Bali. It's a lovely Saturday here, and what we wanted to talk a little bit about, Greg, is that one of the things that is different about Bali is there are different places, obviously different regions, that people can stay. Now, Noosa Dua is home to many of the resorts. There are resorts in the rest of Bali, but Noosa Dua is the original location for resorts in Bali. And what I'll do is I'll ask Farida to tell us a little bit about the Swiss Grand and tell us a little bit about the hotel here first, because it's unusual in that it's a smaller hotel, isn't it, Farida?
Yes, that's correct. It's Swiss Grand Bali, previously, but now the Grand Bali Noosa Dua, okay, since January this year. So we previously under the Super Hotel International, it's like a chain hotel, but then the owner has decided to, become an independent hotel. It's a 63-room boutique resort. It's very nice. It's a very nice hotel. It has big rooms. I think I can't believe that the hotel has the biggest rooms in Bali, four standard type rooms.
That's pretty good, Farida. How many staff do you run for a 65-room hotel, Farida? How many staff do you have?
How many employees? So we have 90 employees all together. It's a good number in ratio, I guess.
And having stayed at other hotels in Noosa Dua, Greg, I can tell you that the rooms are bigger. And being small, it actually has a number of advantages. One of them, Farida, is that it's easier for the staff to actually be able to speak to the guests.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's true. Yes, and people are, they love to be, to be greeted with names. Macca say that because we have just a small number of, so people are know each other and the guests are being greeted with their name, and it's really, really, a good time. And that's compared for us and a good, a good thing for the guests.
Now, one thing, Greg, I know that some of the listeners will be interested in, we all know that the Australian government says to people they should not be travelling to Bali. Now, obviously I have, Jonathan, my partner, has, but in terms of security here, I'll let Farida tell us what the hotels and what the shopping centres have done to make people feel safer and to actually make it safer.
Yeah, that tourism, has become a very important investment for the Balinese. Direct or indirect, the Balinese are really depending on the tourism. And we are living from the tourism as well. As Macca said, that all the we'll call it, like the government, police, the Balinese, the people who is involved in the industry, they do it together. They do a lot of things, to ensure that everybody, our village guests, are feeling comfortable, are feeling safe to come to Bali. Like the security measurements in every hotel, in department store or malls, really, everybody are doing anything what have to do.
And it is visible, Greg, and listeners, but it's not intrusive. I suppose it is necessary, but it's also done in a way that, is effective. So, in my opinion, and obviously the government has a different view, but I think that I feel quite safe here and I feel quite comfortable with their own decisions. But, as I walk around and observe things, the thing that hasn't changed in Bali is that the locals obviously want you to eat in their restaurant or buy in their shop, but Also, they genuinely do have, they are very, very fond of Australia.
Yeah, where you like.
So the relationship the Australians have with the Balinese is a very good one. It goes back a very long time. For much, much more than what it's worth, and they will be promising you something, and basically, that's the warning. The other thing was, when you do come here, remember that when you're bargaining, you know, with stallholders or whatever, you're only bargaining, realistically, over a couple of dollars. Don't be miserable. These people rely on you, you know, for their living. And doesn't mean you pay the first price, but have a sensible bargain about it. Don't get upset about it, because believe me, if they say to you, you know, this price is too cheap that they sell it to you, believe me, they're still making a profit. Okay, so don't beat people down too much. It doesn't do us any good, and it doesn't do them any good.
It's the most spacious rooms in Bali, if you ask me, and that's true, because as far as I know, a standard type room, the biggest in Bali is only 45, and we have 55. You know, that's really cool.
And believe me, this does make a difference. And I'm not getting a commission for this business. You know, sometimes I stay in hotels and I don't like them, and I tell everyone I don't like them. I like this hotel; it's nice. It has a good feel about it. And it's about, you know, it is about enjoying the holiday. That's what you can do. So any of our listeners that come here and come and stay here, they should look up, they should ask for Farida, because she will look after them.
Fantastic.
For me, at the Grand Bali Nusa Dua Bali.
Yes.
Now, I do have a question.
Do you want to ask us anything else?
Yes, I do have a question. It's about expat Aussies that are running businesses. Does Farida and her part of Bali have much connection with the expat Aussies?
Do you have any connection with people from other countries that are running businesses here in Nusa Dua? Are there any running bars or the restaurants that you know?
Yeah, of course. Yes, we have.
Yes, she does. So what was the question, Greg?
Yeah. So which bars would Farida recommend for guests coming to stay at her hotel?
Which bars?
Yeah, which bars?
Transport.
Drinking.
Okay. Where?
Probably. Well, there aren't that many bars in Nusa Dua.
Actually, there's shopping and entertainment complex. It's in the middle of the. The hotel complex. Nusa Dua is actually like a hotel complex. You know, with many hotels, and then there is a shopping complex, and there are bars and restaurants. So you can go. People can go there. Walk, or we also provide free transfer. In Nusa Dua, people can go. Actually, you're having a bar or having drinks everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
Fantastic.
You know, there are many, many places in Kuta that we know about. One thing I've discovered about Kuta, some of the restaurants in Kuta, the more upscale ones, are actually quite expensive. There's one that I was looking at, and I'll name it, Kudetar, which, and the menu's on the web, so if people want to have a look. It's actually more expensive than the last time I ate in Paris at a 4-star restaurant. So you need to, you need to do your research first. But yeah, certainly the Bali Collection.
Yeah.
The shopping centre. It's not just a shopping centre, it's restaurants and bars as well. It's really nice. It's got a nice feel to it.
Well, it's been really good to talk to you, Farida, and you, Macca. Farida, one little tip. Make sure you check the bar fridge in Macca's room before he leaves.
You're harming my reputation. Okay, well, look, thanks again for the opportunity, Greg. And from David, from Macca, and
from Farida
in Nusa Dua, thank you for listening to Detours on Joy 94.9. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now, Macca, that was quite an extraordinary interview you had over there. You obviously had a ball in Bali.
Yes, look, it was a lot of fun, and yes, she actually came in on her day off to do that, and we had a couple of timing issues and some broadcasting issues, so that was the reason for the delay. But she was, she's got a hard job, as all of them do there in Bali at the moment, because occupancy is so low, and the hotel was. You know, I think 20%, and that's not unusual amongst the hotels there at the moment. Of course, it is off season as well, but you can definitely see it. But let's start off with when we left. How did we fly there, Jonathan?
Death Star or One Star or Jet Star?
Yeah.
Oh, don't say Death Star.
No,
that's not good.
No, lovely Airbus, and we went over in Star Class.
Mm-hmm,
of course, indeed. Janine's turning her nose up at an Airbus, because she's a Boeing girl. They're the pilot's planes, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got the feeling.
Although I have to apologise to Guy, a very good friend of mine, who's a pilot here at the moment. He's probably throwing daggers at me.
Right. Oh, is he an Airbus person?
He is.
Oh, well. Mm. He can't help it if he's wrong, can he?
So, on the Jetstar flight, did you have any Qantas staff on the Jetstar flight, or is it just the Jetstar staff flying on Qantas planes these days?
No, no. Well, on the way over, I didn't detect any. It was actually, the plane was fairly empty. I would have thought 50% full. On the way back, I think it was pretty full, and there were some Qantas staff disguised as tourists, but well-dressed tourists, travelling there, and they'd paid some money to upgrade. Look, the Jetstar, at the end of the day, you're paying an amount of money to fly. The big disappointment for me with Star Class, one is you really can't sleep in their leather-covered banana lounges, because that's basically what they're like, but it's the food. What do you reckon, Jonathan? It's crap, isn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty disappointing.
Yeah.
But then again, I didn't really expect much.
No, but you think, it's... You know, they sell it as an experience, and yes, look, it's cheaper. It's cheaper than
it's
an experience. But at the end of the day, the plane takes off, it gets there, it doesn't crash, and your luggage comes out the other end, and that's what matters. But unfortunately, when we talk about airlines, we talk about the experience. It's the cabin crew and there was nothing wrong with the crew. They were very friendly, even though they'd run out of corned beef and pickle sandwiches.
Yes. You weren't too happy.
Yes, I wasn't. I wanted corned beef.
Well, they tend to make or break. Like the airlines, and I think the airlines don't... a lot of airlines don't respect their cabin crew enough. It's certainly a job I would not like to do.
It'd be a really hard job, because it's you've got a... Whatever the meal is, or whether it's a sandwich, you've got to serve it all, and you've got to clear it all up, and it's got to be done in a very compressed time frame.
And they don't make the food.
That's no.
You often you get like a gay boy that comes up with and he's got a sense of humour. He's like, I am so sorry.
Yes.
Like, I didn't make it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, there are a few fantastic gay stuff. I think of a friend of mine called $2 Meals, who flies from the Melbourne to Melbourne to Singapore via Darwin. And $2 Meals is fabulous, because any time he spots a family member, everything costs $2.
Yes.
Doesn't know what you buy, it's $2. It's fantastic. Now, Jonathan, I want to know, when you get to Bali now, when you arrive in Denpasar, what's it like at the airport post Bali bombings, post everything now with not many tourists? What was it like for you arriving at Denpasar?
Well, I have to say, I haven't been to Bali before, so everything was fine. It was as if nothing happened. It's like a regular airport, regular Bali. Pretty much it.
Just not many people?
Not many people. So no queues, straight through?
No, I thought, there'll be a scrag fight to get the visa and all this, but no. And also thought, because they can be, some countries in Asia can be a bit, in Singapore particularly, about electronic product, particularly recorded electronic product that you bring in. They ask you...
Of course, you don't buy any of that.
Oh, no. But I mean, they're concerned that you might be bringing something in that's culturally damaging, and I'm not talking about porn, I'm talking about, perhaps some honest news. So, I'm saying, oh, yeah, do you have DVDs? And I'm going, yes, I've these, and thinking, oh, yes. Because I know one other time that they wanted to confiscate some DVDs I had. Not because of what I would find in any way offensive, but it was stuff that wasn't available there. And that you might play it or you might sell it, and of course, there's such respecters of copyright that there are miles and miles and miles of shops saying fakes.
Yeah.
But I mean, the DVDs... Those who've been to Bali in the past, and Jonathan hasn't, it was always the cassette shops.
Yes, yeah.
And, also with beautifully misspelt titles sometimes.
Yes.
Now it's DVDs. And, and there are, there's the CamPod versions, but also the stuff that's just downloaded off the net, and also the stuff that, obviously, Academy Award judges have had the DVD and sold it, or thrown it out in the rubbish even, and someone's got it. So, they're everywhere. But, I mean, Jonathan's been lots and lots of places. Why don't you read off the list, Jonathan?
Oh, okay.
Come on.
Well, I spent most of my time in England, so that's just doing the whole Bath and Stonehenge and all that kind of stuff. But I spent most of my time in London. Fluttered around to Barcelona, Amsterdam, Paris. Drove around Islet, Prague. Went to the Edinburgh Festival, which was great. And then on my way back, I stopped over in Hong Kong, then Japan, back to Hong Kong again, and then back to Melbourne.
See. Now, which airlines did you fly with in all these adventures?
Oh, dear. Okay, we've got Ryanair, which is my least favourite airline.
Why is that?
Because it's a discount airline, and everyone understands that. The thing is that they add, for any opportunity that they can charge something, they will. So
when the oxygen mask drops, is it got a £2 voucher on it?
Possibly, yeah.
No, you actually have to put a coin in to operate.
I have to point in for it to
swipe
it's like
card.
The trolley.
Or you swipe your card.
Well, that's it. I mean, like it's. I mean, you have to pay a fee to pay by credit card, debit, direct debit, and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, well, how are you supposed to pay without paying an additional fee? And the airports are pretty awful. You know, Stansted and Luton and Gatwick and all that kind of
all
stuff.
All the ones you sort of. That sound semi-exotic, but you know, but you know that they're not, like Luton.
Well, Heathrow isn't that exotic either.
No, well,
but
you know.
Heathrow's easy to get to. I mean, because I used to live in Paddington, near Paddington, so you just catch a train. It's fantastic. But everything else, it's like you've got to catch a bus, or it really isn't worth it. Not worth it.
Did you fly Iberian by any chance?
No. There's a list. I should continue. EasyJet, Japanese Airlines, BMI.
Which is British Midland International?
I think so.
They have the cool hats.
That's right, yeah.
The really old English hats. Yeah.
British Airways, Qantas, Jetstar, of course, Cathay, and Virgin Atlantic.
Now, Virgin Atlantic, Pam Ann, that fabulous Australian entertainer, called it Slut Air, didn't she?
No. And she's completely right.
No, because fantastic. Of the cavern crew. Yeah, that.
What do you mean?
What do you mean?
Yeah, lovely. All right.
But they're dressed up. They're very well dressed up. And, I can't fault it. Fortunately, I flew on the pointy end. So they had proper beds, unlike Qantas.
The bed is level. It's just that the plane's at an angle. So they say, if you look at it compared to the horizon, the bed is level. The thing is, you still slide off it.
Yeah, you need a five-point harness or a Velcro suit.
A Velcro
to keep
suit,
you in
yeah.
Hands.
Silence of the Lambs kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Ooh.
Oh, it could be fun. Yeah. A whole heap of people. The switchboard's lit up now. How do we get those seats?
Yes. So, out of all those airlines, who do you rate Ryanair is your least favourite?
Yeah, the least favourite.
And your favourite?
I would say Virgin Atlantic.
Yeah?
Mm.
And why?
The beds were good. The staff, fantastic. And they had they don't have it anymore, but they have a person there to massage you.
Yeah, they've stopped that, haven't they?
They've stopped that. And they've got a little bar.
Yeah.
So it's really good. And it's they've got their own drive-in check-in thing at Heathrow and all that kind of stuff. So it was super, super convenient.
Mm.
So it's a bit extreme from that to Ryanair. So.
Well, there's a big gulf in between because Ryanair, what was your cheapest flight? Out of all those, which was your cheapest flight?
Ryanair, I think it was 20 quid to Barcelona.
From London?
Yeah.
So, $50.
Yeah. Yeah. But then it didn't count for the, I think it was about 30 or 20 to 30 quid bus ride.
Yeah.
And the £6 £6 luggage fee and all that kind of stuff. So, probably I should have flown British Airways instead.
Yeah. So, does it actually end up much cheaper when you, by the time you've added those things in, does it end up much cheaper than something like BA?
Not really, especially when you factor in the time.
Yeah.
But if you're a person who is a budget traveller and knows how it works and is prepared to sacrifice and go the way and go, yes, I'm prepared to put everything in a small little container, a carry-on, it's perfect. It's a perfect way to go.
Mm.
I think where the budget airlines all come undone is if there's any delays or any issues, the big airlines, they have the ability to move people, they have the staff to deal with you, and that's where they really come into their own, the big airlines, like get you into hotels or do whatever, depending on your ticket. And
Yeah, you don't get this feeling, although it has happened, this feeling of abandonment.
Now, coming up after this bit of music, let's take us on, our listeners, on part of your journey. Where will we focus on next, Jonathan? Where's your most favourite destination you went to?
I would say London.
Let's explore London then with Jonathan Yee here on Detours.
And Macca.
And Craig, of course. And Janine.
Yes.
on Detours with Macca and Greg and our guests Jonathan Yee and Janine, of course. And that song is Ain't No Love with Steve Winwood with Sam Moore. Now, Jonathan, over in London, you must have had an extraordinary time. 7 months in Europe, but most of the time in London, a big chunk of time in London.
Well, the thing is, my parents moved back and they had a little pad, so I thought, well, you know, I'll just kind of flutter there and stay there for a while.
So if you've got a home base you don't have to pay, that's an incredible cost gone from...
Well, there is a cost. You have to live with your parents. So
that's lovely. I mean, boys coming home to their mum and dad's beautiful. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, for the first day, and then after that it's like, oh, you know, when are you going to leave? It's like, but it was good.
For you, the highlight about London, if you think about London and put a smile on your face, what is it?
I would say the people. Definitely the people, because it's so different. It's just a mix. Because I don't really love London, but more of a love-hate London, and I like that kind of relationship with it.
About the people? Are they? I mean, in Melbourne, if you walk up to people from overseas, if you're overseas and you walk up to people and you smile at them and say g'day, they might just walk past. What about London? Can you walk up to strangers and say g'day?
Some you can, some you can't. But the thing is, like, I remember being incredibly homesick. And you can't really become truly homesick in London, because you go to a mate's place and they'll live in Fulham or, you know, what is it, Earl's Court. And you're just walking in the street and you'd see all these people with board shorts, Havaianas, and they'd start opening their mouths, and you're just surrounded by Australians.
You would have missed the blue sky, surely. I've never seen so many shades of grey.
Yes, yes. You do crack the sads after a while.
Crack the sads in London.
Yeah. Oh, but imagine that.
It's only... If you want to hop out of London, get out of London and go somewhere else, I mean, you've got the country, you've got the rural part of UK, which is easy to get to on their rail network and, I mean, short-distance flights. But you've got France. How far away is Paris? You must have jumped across the channel or whatever.
Well, I've been really disadvantaged with the whole... Or unlucky with my travels, because when I wanted to go to Paris through the underground, they had a fire.
in the tunnel.
Yeah. And when I wanted to go to Athens, they had the riot. So it's kind of never... Hey,
that's quite spooky, you know? Actually, these things, you were planning and things were happening.
So I reckon there's a bit of a connection.
So you never made it to Paris from London?
We went to the Paris Motor Show.
Paris Motor Show, yeah. Uh-huh. I flew from Melbourne and we actually met up at Heathrow in... What's the new terminal?
Terminal 5,
and that's where I had to recant all the terrible things I'd said about...
Oh, it was fantastic.
It was fantastic, even though the British Airways bitch on the door of the lounge didn't want to let him in, even though he had the right ticket and the right membership and everything. Oh, no, go down there. Mm-hmm. And I went, oi! In here. Fantastic terminal.
It is a fantastic terminal.
Yeah, Terminal 5, definitely... I mean, the rest of Heathrow, you know, is a slag heap. Like, we all know that. It's terrible. Yeah. Great opportunity for a paint or carpet salesman, that airport.
Well, maybe here in Melbourne, the people that would plan their businesses around the Melbourne Eye that might want to become paint and carpet salesmen now. I mean, did you actually go on the London Eye? I mean, we've got this Melbourne cartwheel that doesn't move, and you've actually got a wheel in London that does move. Did you go up the Eye?
Yes, I did. I wasn't prepared to pay for it. We had one of those free tickets, but it was good. It was great.
And you actually get a really good view
it was during summer, and London summers, it's
two
weird.
Days. 2 days of summer, isn't it?
Oh, no, it actually gets really hot. It's pretty amazing. But it feels weird because it's only 30 degrees, but you feel, oh, my God, it's like 40. London Eye, free ticket, air-conditioned.
Fantastic.
Suck there for an hour.
How many people fit in a cabin?
Captures are pretty big. Granted, I think there was about 20.
Oh, my God.
But there was plenty of space.
20.
Yeah. There was a child.
No.
Yeah, that was quite... Yeah.
Great respects to the rainbow parents out there. Okay, from London, you've travelled widely as well. It's about 9 countries there. What's your second favourite?
Amsterdam.
What about Amsterdam got your energies flowing?
I would like to say the coffee shops, but no, it's... just the ambience of it all. It's a great vibe.
So this is old Amsterdam or new Amsterdam? Which part of the city?
Is there a difference?
Oh, there is a difference. Too right, there is, isn't there, Macca?
There is.
Yeah, which would you prefer, Macca? Which part?
I like the coffee shops.
Listeners, if you have an understanding why Macca and Jonathan might like the coffee shops,
SMS, we like good coffee.
0427 Joy 949.
0427 Joy 949.
What happens in the Amsterdam coffee shops?
They make coffee.
Yeah, very good mocha.
Very good mocha. Mm. And there's all sorts of things to choose from.
Ah, very good. Have you been to Amsterdam?
Yeah, I have, but not for a few years now. Actually, probably not for about 8 years.
And you like the coffee shops too?
Oh, no. Because I'd be on overnights with work. No, we don't do such things.
That would keep you awake.
Yeah.
What can the gay and lesbian traveller expect out of Amsterdam that's a gay experience?
Everything, really. I mean, there's clubs that are just way too intense for me. It's just a vibe. It's like, they don't really care. I think the mentality is, especially with work, is like, they don't really care who or what you are as long as you do the job, not a problem. Mm. And it just reflects with everything. They're just very, very open people. It's all full of love. Okay, that sounded a bit too coffee shoppy, but it's a good vibe.
And the language difficulty is not a problem.
No.
Everyone speaks English anyway, don't they?
Yes.
You speak English better than the average Australian.
Yes.
How true.
Now, what about, Prague? I like Prague.
Prague was a pretty rushed thing. I was only there for two or three days. So, unfortunately, when you do those quick things, it's, you know, you do the whole Lonely Planet guide, get there, backpack your hostels and all that kind of stuff, and, Mac is making that face. And just quickly do all the things. I think there's a city maybe an hour away that has that chapel full of skulls.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head, but very impressive.
But I mean, interesting city, you know, Prague, because, you know, for a very long time, of course, it was Eastern Europe. Now, of course, it's part of the EU.
Yeah.
So, in a lot of ways, a lot of the older parts of the city are those that weren't bombed, of course. Are maintained because they didn't pull them down because, one, they didn't have the money, but they didn't need to.
And you're talking 700-year-old parts of the city
as
well.
Yes, exactly,
quite
a
very old,
you know,
civilization.
Not like what, you know, a bit older than wandering down Gore Street, Fitzroy.
There's a few women down Gore Street, Fitzroy that have been around 700 years. A couple of gay men as well. Remember them in a previous lifetime, Matt.
I mean, of the others, I mean, obviously, you know, you couldn't go to Athens because of the rise. I remember having the discussion about this. Oh, you know, do I go? Do I not go? You know, I'm thinking, oh, who's going to attack a gorgeous man like that in Athens?
Well, that's actually a difference between BA and a value carrier, is that if something like that happens, with a value carrier, you can't cancel your ticket. You just lose your money. But with
we're not flying to Athens, and you've done your dough. Basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll fly you there and then that's it.
And dump you in an airport that's being attacked.
But with BA, you know, fortunately I had a ticket that allowed it. And I'm sure there's some value tickets there that don't allow you to do that. But at least you had the ability to say, look, I don't want to go. And they go, okay, here's your money back. Would you like it as a credit or a refund and all that kind of stuff?
Well, responsible carriers have a responsibility not to dump you inside a war zone or a riot zone. They actually have obligations internationally not to do that.
Mm.
So I think it's important that you do cover your ticket costs. You don't want to be out of dosh. If that's all your money's gone on value tickets and you've got no room to go to a second location, you might be stuck in a country.
You could be stuck at Luton Airport.
What if you could claim that on travel insurance? If something breaks out in a city,
This is the thing, is, you know, we researched our travel insurance and we actually went with what Greg recommended, which was basically you get the absolute best policy you can afford, and when you read down the list of exclusions on the policy that we took, for example, there are very few. And that's, you know, you think, okay, well, it's costing me more, but it's with insurance, everyone always says, oh, I'm insured for everything, but what happens? And with travel insurance, you don't know what is going to happen. I mean, the airport could be closed down like it was in Bangkok.
Yeah.
You know, and you're there. You can't have a hotel room because that hotel room has been taken by someone else. So you've got nowhere to stay. You've got to stay in the airport. You know, the ATMs are empty in the airport. You can't get out of the airport. You can't get any food. Like, nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let alone somewhere like, you know, Uzbekistan or something. So that's why you have travel insurance. I want to talk about Hong Kong.
How about we have a little bit of music? We'll come back and talk about Hong Kong. Very briefly.
Very briefly. Bah.
You're on Detours with Macca and Greg and our guests Jonathan and Janine. This is Macca Music on a Saturday on Detours, Joy 94.9.
And who's that? Who is it?
Oh, this is... It's Al Green. Al Green.
Yeah.
And his song is I Feel Good, and we feel good every Saturday.
I feel really good. Now, guys, Hong Kong. First off, Janine, what is your favourite thing about Hong Kong? What do you love most about Hong Kong?
That's a tough question. Live and let live city, very much just... It's probably the ultimate capitalist city. And that probably sounds terrible to a lot of people, but it really is. Get out there, do what you want to do, make your money, you know, doing whatever you want to do, be who you want to be. Being gay in Hong Kong is definitely, well, for me, certainly not an issue. And it's just the city of life, and I love it.
Cool. Jonathan?
Wow. Just love it because it's a family city. It's like it's something that I just associate with. Like, you know how you grew up in the city, and it's just that familiarity, but then every time I come back... It's changed. It's...
Oh, yeah. 3 weeks and
3 weeks, everything just
and
changes,
yeah.
And there's a new mall, and there's a new building. You just go, well, where am I? I love that challenge. It's that familiar city, but different.
Yeah, it changes rapidly. Like, I've been away 2 weeks, and I know there'll be shops, well, particularly in this financial climate, yeah, will close or moved or...
Now, yeah. Someone who's going to Hong Kong, let's say 2 or 3 days.
Yep.
A couple of days. What should they do? What should they go and see?
I would avoid all the major tourist things. One thing that people should definitely try and do is walk up to the peak,
mm-hmm.
because you get to see an aspect of Hong Kong, the greenery and things that you wouldn't expect that are there, and like waterfalls and all that sort of stuff. And if you're going to catch the tram, catch it down.
Really? But, I would have thought the other way, catch the tram up and walk down.
The problem with catching the tram up is everyone else does it. So if you're there at a peak time, the queue is horrendous. So by walking up and going to have a coffee and take your time, it's...
And how long does it take?
That's the difference between a lesbian and a gay man. See, the gay man's still recovering from the night before. And the lesbian's thinking about the afternoon.
Even more stereotypical, I've now got a three-legged dog, which someone said to me the other day, oh, my God, you're such a lesbian. I've got a three-legged dog.
Are you in bed by 8 o'clock?
Me? No. Oh. My DJ in Hong Kong.
Oh, no, you're...
So,
No. Okay, so clubs in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Give us a couple of clubs that gay and lesbian traveller going to Hong Kong should go to.
Well, I guess the one I DJ at the most, which is mostly gay men, because I don't know where the gay women are in Hong Kong, is Volume.
Yep.
It's, you know, and then there's the traditional propaganda, which I tend not to support, for personal reasons. And then
propaganda from Janine this morning.
The best club, though, is a mixed club, Drop, for sure. Yeah, it's small, it's cute, it has great sound system, and it just has a really good energy.
How do you find it? Where's the best listing for clubs?
Where do you find it?
We've now got a Time Out magazine, yeah. Which has, obviously, if you're looking for gay and lesbian stuff, it has a gay and lesbian section, and so that would be where I'd look.
We'll post that on our Detours Facebook. Search on Facebook for Detours at joy.org.au and you'll see us.
Yes, eventually, I'm told that I'll be on there.
Told you have to be on there. We've had demands from the members of our Detours Facebook for you to be on there.
Demands. Now, Jonathan, where would you tell people to get, if someone visiting Hong Kong, what would you tell them to do? Janine said walk up to the peak.
Yeah, the peak is good. The gardens. Yeah.
The botanical gardens.
Yeah. Because people forget that there's no... Because everyone thinks Hong Kong's like full of cities and all that kind of stuff, and buildings and all that kind of stuff, which is true. But there are nice beauty spots everywhere. Botanical Gardens is one of them.
Now, the ex-governor's mansion, where Chris Patten lived, what's that used for now?
I believe it's still... the mansion is on Lower Albert Road. I believe Donald Chung is the... Chung. Depends which media person you listen to. They refurbished it, did the goldfish pond for a couple of million dollars.
Ex-civil servant turned communist.
Yeah.
Well, communist.
Well, he wears a bow tie.
Yeah. So, well-dressed communist.
But it's a beautiful building. I'd love to go and have a look.
Yeah, and the grounds.
Yes, for sure.
Yes, I mean, it'd have to be... it's priceless, isn't it? I mean, in Hong Kong, that amount of space, but I mean, also what it is.
And right in the middle of the city, and it's just above the Botanic Gardens.
Yes. But, worst thing about Hong Kong? Or least liked thing about Hong Kong?
Some of the sounds that you get as you're walking around the streets, perhaps. Yes, Hawking's never my favourite. So, you know, if you can put up with that, then that's a minor thing.
Yeah, Jonathan?
The people. There's just so many people there.
Yeah.
And they can't walk in straight lines, can they,
Jonathan? No. And we drive like that as well, so you can see where it comes from.
Do you have a lot of bikes in Hong Kong? Has it become a bit of a bike central, or is that more on the China?
No, China.
Actually, I was taking a bike tour in Amsterdam, and I was asking the guy who ran it, you know, who are the really good drivers, bike riders, and who aren't? And they said, well, your kind, meaning Chinese, worst bike riders, people from Hong Kong, because we just don't have bikes there, and it's such a me society. You don't really look around and go, oh, you know, I shouldn't be walking across here because I might be cutting someone else off and all that kind of stuff. So we're not that good. But he's also rated Australians as pretty bad, poor bike riders as well, compared to the
I would agree.
Yeah. Oh, we're shocking.
Just really quick, really quickly, less than a sentence, Janine, how would you describe Hong Kong?
It's the city of life.
City of life? Jonathan?
Busy.
Well, that's pretty much the show for today.
It's really good to have you, Jonathan. Thanks for coming on to Detours.
Yeah,
and
thank you.
Janine, thanks for joining us again.
Pleasure. Yeah.
And not this Saturday, but next Saturday, I won't be here. I will be down at the Grand Prix.
Ah, fantastic.
So,
we'll have a phone in from the Grand Prix.
Absolutely. Yeah. I might even see who I can organise down there for an interview. So I'll be there for my work, and we'll be on turn 12, so when our lovely little facility, but absolutely fantastic it's going to be.
And next week we have Peter McBriarty, who's chief concierge at the Langham Hotel, and Steve Sirik from Hilton on the Park joining us here on Detours.
Now, many, many years ago, Jodie and I had some of the concierge guys on. Very, very interesting, you know, and the little network that they have, and, you know, access to all sorts of stuff, but I bet they've got some stories to tell.
So tune in next week.
Yes, tune in next week.
12 noon Melbourne time on Detours.
This is Macca.
And Greg.
On Detours Joy 94.9.
Goodbye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.